Let men live the most exemplary lives, and yet they will not necessarily become partners of this great love, and have the qualities that are necessary to enable them to receive the great gift of unison with the Father. I urge all men to live a good moral life, because it has its own reward in the spirit world, and makes them happier as spirit beings in a condition of mere natural love, and will fit them for a life in the spirit world which will bring to them happiness, but not the happiness of those who fit themselves for a greater happiness in the celestial kingdom. I will not discourage men from seeking the life of a moralist, or of one who tries to follow the truths of conduct which the golden rule imposes, but on the contrary, emphasize the necessity for such a life. A good man approaches nearer to the image of the Father than any other being can possibly attain to, and his reward in the future life will be that which comes only from living the life of such a man. So I say, the more a man lives in accordance with these moral precepts, the nearer he will approach the image in which he was created. But why should men be satisfied with the image when the real substance may be theirs by obeying the invitation of the Father? The image may satisfy some who are content with small things, but the aspiring soul wants the real substance which the Father offers freely to those who will accept his invitation. No man can really live a good moral life unless he has as his guide the love that I have mentioned. I do not believe that any man who knows the difference between the image and the substance will be satisfied with the former, for if so he is rejecting the greatest happiness that even the Father can bestow upon him. So let not men be content with trying to live good moral lives, but seek with all their hearts the love that makes them truly angels of God, and such angels as can feel and realize, by reason of the divinity which such love brings to them, the certainty that they are immortal. Immortality is only of God and anything less than God, or his divine essence which makes the creature a part of that divinity is not immortal. Adam and Eve, as they are called, were mortals, free from sin and obedient to the Father, and thought that they were immortal, but when the temptation came and they yielded, they realized to their great sorrow that they were not immortal. And so will every spirit of mortal be in the future life, where the divine love of the Father has not become a part of its existence. Life on earth is an important part of the great eternity of living, and men should realize this to its fullest meaning, and not think the earth a mere stopping place where the spirit is enfolded in flesh only for the pleasures and gratification of its carnal appetites. This earth life is a fleeting shadow of the spirit life, but an important shadow to the happiness which man may enjoy in the future. It is the most important period of man's whole existence, and the way that such life is lived may determine the whole future life of the man. I don't mean that there is no redemption beyond the grave, for the mercy of the Father continues into the spirit life, but when man fails to accept this mercy, I mean the way in which he may become a divine child of the Father, while in the earth life, he may never accept it in the spirit life. So many spirits are contented to remain in the happiness of their natural love, and refuse to be convinced that there is a greater love and happiness awaiting them in the Father's kingdom. 119, the Paget Messages 1915. Which may be theirs, if they will only believe and seek. This I say from my knowledge of the real condition of spirits in the spirit world, and the difficulty which the redeemed spirits have found in their endeavors to convince these spirits who are enjoying the happiness of their natural love, that there is a happier and better sphere in which they may live, if they will seek for the divine love of the Father. As I said, when on earth, strait is the gate and narrow is the way which leads to life eternal, and few there be who enter therein. And this saying applies to the spirit world as well as to the material world. So let me urge upon all men to seek the straight and narrow way, for only by it can men come to the full enjoyment of what the Father has provided for them. I will now stop, but in closing will say, with all the love and knowledge which I possess, let men seek this great divine love, and in faith they will find it, and forever be one with the Father immortal as he is immortal, and happy beyond all conception. So I will say with all my love and blessings, and the blessings of the Father, seek and ye shall find. Good night. Your loving brother and friend, Jesus. I am here, your grandmother. What a truthful and important message the Master wrote you. He knows that what he said is of the most vital importance to mankind. I only wish that all mankind could hear his message, for if that could be, Many a thinking and perhaps thoughtless man would turn his thoughts to God and strive to obtain that great love, of which the Master wrote so eloquently. The more I think of the great work that you have been selected to do, the more I am surprised, because, as I conceive it to be, this work is of more importance to mankind than anything that has been attempted since the Master was on earth and unfolded to his disciples and hearers the great truths of his Father. So try with all your faith and earnestness to get into as high spiritual condition as possible so that you may be able to receive and write the important and heretofore hidden truths which the Master shall disclose to you. He is so much in earnest that these truths shall be given to mankind, that in selecting you, he has done you the greatest possible honor. Your loving grandmother, Anne Rollins, May 28, 1915. I am here, Jesus. I want to tell you what I mean by immortality, as you and your friend differed today in your ideas of what it means. When Adam, as he is called, was told that if he should disobey God and eat of the forbidden fruit, he should surely die, the word death meant death of the soul, so far as its future progress in that which would ensure its receiving the divine essence of the Father's love was involved. It did not mean the physical death or the death of the body, because it is very apparent that after his doom was pronounced, he lived in the flesh a great many years. But his soul's progression stopped, and it was only after my coming to earth and teaching the doctrine and truth of man being restored to the condition which Adam occupied before his fall, did mankind have the privilege of becoming immortal again, that is, of being permitted and in condition to obtain that soul progress which would enable them to become one with and a part of the Father in his love and affections. I do not mean that Adam was endowed with this divine love when he was created, but that he had that formation of soul potentialities which, if properly exercised, would have brought him in that unison with the Father that would have made his nature divine, and when he disobeyed the commandments of the Father, he died, so far as that possibility of obtaining the divine nature was concerned. As to those who lived on earth between Adam's fall and my revelation of the truth of redemption, they did not receive this nature, or potentiality, and were compelled to live only as mortals and spirits having the natural love. They never were admitted into the Father's heavenly kingdom, but existed merely as spirits having the natural love which was bestowed upon Adam and his race. Abraham, Isaac and the rest of the persons who are described in the Bible as being children of God, and obedient to his commands, were not partakers of this divine nature, and became so only after my coming to earth and showing the way to its attainment. When I was sent to earth, God sent me with the truth as to mankind's redemption, and at the same time conferred upon mankind the privilege of receiving his divine essence. No sacrifice or death of mine brought this great boon, but only with my coming came this love and the way to obtain it. 120, The Paget Messages 1915, Adam was not created immortal, but had only the potentiality of immortality, and after his death man ceased to have even this potentiality, until God sent it to them with my coming to earth. When it was said, as in Adam all men died, so in me, were all men made alive, it was merely meant that when Adam fell, that which formed a part of his being and made it possible for him to become immortal was taken from him, that is, as to that potentiality and privilege, he died, and was no more able to attain to the condition of soul that enabled him to become one with the Father, or to partake of his divinity, and that in this condition of death mankind remained until, as I say, I came and brought with me the restored gift of the soul attribute which made it possible for man to again become immortal. When this gift was bestowed upon man, it was also bestowed upon all those who were then living in the spirit world, but they could obtain it only in the way that was provided for man to obtain it. Understand me, everything that was lost by Adam's fall was restored by my coming with the restored gift, and it embraced every spirit who had ever lived as mortal and every mortal who thereafter lived up to the present time. My coming, of itself, or the death or sacrifice of me by the Jews, did not restore mankind to the condition that existed in Adam before his fall. I was only a messenger of God sent with that gift, and to teach the truth of its restoration to mankind and to spirits. And when, after my death, I descended into hell, as the Bible says, but which saying does not express the destination of my going, for the true meaning is that I went into the world of spirits, I proclaimed to the spirits the truth of the bestowal of this restored life which had been lost by Adam's disobedience. All spirits, good and bad, now have this restored potentiality of obtaining the divine nature that I have spoken of, and immortality. So you see, when Adam died it was the death of the soul quality or potentiality which makes immortality possible. When the Bible speaks of those men of ancient times who were God's prophets and beloved children as walking with him, it merely means that they had obtained such a high development of their natural love that they could occupy those spheres in the spirit world, upon their physical death, which made them, mere spirits of mortals, close to the Father and supremely happy. I mean that happiness which does not partake of the divine 121, nature. They were not in the same condition of soul attributes as was Adam before his fall, for they did not have this potentiality, and any interpretation of anything written in the Bible which gives to any man or spirit at that time the possibility of receiving the divine essence of the Father is erroneous and misleading. As I have said, my death or sacrifice by blood, as is emphasized in creeds and worship of the churches, did not in the slightest degree work to bring about the restoration of this great favor of God to man. They were merely the results of the conditions of the beliefs of men in the Jewish nation, which would not tolerate my declarations of truth. My death, etc., did not appease any wrath of God towards men, but of his own great love for his creatures he bestowed this gift, or privilege of the soul, which man had lost by Adam's disobedience. It was the disobedience of believing that he was not dependent upon God for the soul quality or potentiality that made it possible for him to partake of God's divine nature. The tree of good and evil merely represented the knowledge that God had reserved unto himself of the existence of that which, if known to Adam, would have subjected him to temptations that would destroy this soul quality of which I have spoken. And when Adam ate of the fruit of this tree, that is when he disobeyed God and sought the knowledge of those things which subjected him to the temptations that might cause him to cease to be all good, God took away the potentiality of Adam becoming one with him and immortal. It was a direct punishment for disobedience, and the result was that man was left mere man, either as a mortal or as a spirit. I do not think that it was ever said that if Adam should eat of the tree of life, he would live forever and become as a god, because he was already the recipient of this tree of life, in that attribute of his soul which could, by its proper development, make himself like the gods. And here you must understand that gods could mean only those who possessed this divine nature of the Father. There was only one God, and all other living beings in the spirit world were merely those who were possessed of the godlike qualities of love and obedience, none were gods. The angels of God were merely the spirits that I have last described. When it was said that man was made a little lower than the angels, it meant that while these angels had that divine nature perfected to a more or less degree, man had only the potentiality of soul, the Paget Messages 1915, that would enable him to obtain that development which would perfect him so that he could become an angel. But this saying does not apply to any man born after Adam. And before my coming with the announcement that God had restored to man this divine attribute which Adam had forfeited. So you see, the loss of immortality does not mean the death of the physical body, but the death of that quality or potentiality of the soul which enabled man to become like the Father in certain of his divine attributes. And more strictly speaking, the mere possession of the soul of this quality is not immortality, or rather it does not make a man or spirit immortal, but merely gives him such quality of soul and potentiality that, by its proper development, he may become immortal. In the future, all men, either as spirits or mortals, will possess that soul quality or potentiality, until the great day of judgment shall again take from those who have not, at the time, perfected their souls into the enjoyment of the divine nature, as I have explained. When that day comes, those who are without this divine essence in their souls will be forever deprived of the privilege of receiving the great gift of this divine essence, or in other words, of God's divine love. And after that time, those spirits who have never acquired this divine nature will be permitted to live merely as spirits enjoying their natural love, just as Adam after his fall, and all spirits and men who lived between that time and my coming, lived only in their natural love. This is the second death. Adam's was the first, and the great day of judgment will declare the second. And after that, never again will man have the opportunity of partaking of this divine essence of the Father and becoming as one of the gods. Men may reason to the utmost of their limited intellects in the way of saying that God would not subject his creatures to this second death and thereby deprive them of this great boon of becoming partakers of his divine nature, and the great happiness that comes with it. But such reasoning, or the conclusion reached, will not change the fact. What I tell you is the fact, and many men, to their sorrow, will when too late realize that it is true. And men will not be justified in complaining of this. The opportunity is now given and will in the future be given to all men and spirits to become the children of the Father, in the angelic and divine sense, and if they refuse to do so, they can have no grounds upon which to base the accusation of injustice against the Father or his love. 122. He will still be their Father, even though they may not accept his great gift, and they will from the natural love bestowed upon them be comparatively happy, but they will not partake of his heavenly kingdom. They will be like the guests invited to the marriage feast, who, because of various excuses, declined to attend. While they were not deprived of other food and sustenance, yet the more precious food which the host had provided for them at the feast, they never partook of, and never thereafter had the opportunity to. Many of my parables in the Bible illustrate this great truth when properly understood, as men did in those days when I was on earth, but now harden their hearts and shut their intellects to the truths of these parables and to my teachings. Of course, ultimately, all these men will be saved from sin and error, and in fact, sin and error will be destroyed entirely. Men and spirits will live in comparative happiness, but they will live in death and not in life, so far as the life of the soul, with its possibilities of becoming divine and of enjoying the great happiness which the divine love of the Father bestows, is concerned. So you see, immortality does not pertain to the physical body or to the spiritual body, or to the soul unqualifiedly, but to those qualities of the soul which makes it possible for the soul to become in its nature divine. And immortality does not mean mere continuous existence, because every spirit and every soul may live through all eternity in their individualized form. When it was said in the Bible that I brought immortality and life to light, it did not mean that I showed man merely that they would, as spirits, continue to live forever, but it meant that they would live forever, in the Father's kingdom, with natures divine and not capable of being deprived of the great and true life which is found only in that kingdom. So let you and your friend think over what I have written, and in places where my meaning may not appear plain, I will try, by the inspiration of my knowledge and power, to enlighten your souls and intellects. You are both very mediumistic and easy recipients of inspiration, and as your souls seem to be attuned to the truth, and as you are seeking earnestly for the truth, I will endeavor with all my powers to inspire you with such intellectual thoughts and spiritual perceptions as will enable you to see these truths in all their nakedness, face to face, and not as through a glass, darkly. I must now stop, and give you my blessings, and the blessing of the Father, your friend and brother, Jesus, the Paget Messages 1915. I am here, your grandmother. Well, my son, the discourse of the Master is wonderful. Never before has he explained to mortals the real inner truths of immortality and other truths of a kindred nature. I was somewhat impressed with the earnestness with which he wrote and the great exertion of his thoughts, and love that accompanied his writing. You must study the message earnestly, for in it is truth which appears nowhere else that I am aware of. Oh, the great blessings of the Father to his children! How thankful we should be that we live in a time when this great gift has been restored to mankind, and have the privilege of partaking of it. I will not write more tonight as you are considerably exhausted by your writing. So, with all my love and best wishes for your welfare, I am your loving grandmother, Anne Rollins. June 2, 1915. Let me write just a little as I need help, and I saw how you helped the spirit who wrote. It was, to me, wonderful what a change came to her as you told her of God's love, and when she went with that beautiful spirit who spoke so lovingly to her, I thought that hope is for me too. So, I know you will help me, as I need it so much, and you seem willing to help us all. I am a woman who lived a great many years ago in a land that is far distant from your home, and at a time that runs back into the centuries. I was an Egyptian princess, and lived in the time when your Jesus, that I heard you speak of, was not known to the world. I was taught the philosophy of the ancient Egyptians, and Osiris and Isis were our god and goddess. We worshipped them, but not in love or soul adoration, but in fear and dread. They were not the loving father that you say your god is, but the dread things of power and wrath that called for our obedience through fear of punishment, and the tortures of the hells which they were supposed to rule in, and to torment the spirits of mortals who disobeyed them. So you see, our souls were not developed with love, but our minds were controlled with fear, and we offered our sacrifices to appease the terrible threatening of their wrath. I was naturally a loving woman, and in my life outside of my religious beliefs, I was compassionate and sympathetic. Those who were subject to me in our intercourse of government 123, loved me, and were grateful and obedient subjects. But when it became a question as to our worship and religious duties, I sacrificed many of them to satisfy their wrath and demands of our gods. These sacrifices were made at first openly, but so great did they become, and deleterious to the good of the nation in its political aspect, that latterly our sacrifices were made in private, but they were made nevertheless. Our beliefs were as real and as earnest as other beliefs of you Christians in your God of love and mercy, and we did the will of our gods with as much belief that we were doing our duty, as do you the will of the Father in the belief that you are doing your duty. But as I now see, what a difference in the motives, and what a difference in the results. Our motives were to appease our angry gods, and thereby prevent their wrath from falling upon us who continued to live, and your motives are to get and be filled with the love and mercy of a Father of love, and to have your souls filled with that which will enable you to live in His presence and become supremely happy. In the long years that I have lived in the spirit world, I have learned all this intellectually, and many other things that show me the cruelty and degradation of the beliefs that prevailed when I was a mortal and which resulted in the deaths, physically, of many of my subjects, and the death also of their souls. Love to us, was not a thing divine. Obedience and placating the anger of the gods were the divine things to us. And now, while I have heard of this love of your Father, and have seen the results of this love upon their appearances, and the apparent happiness of the worshippers of your God, yet I have never understood this great love, except in an intellectual way. My soul has never felt the influence of this love, and I had never before thought it necessary for me to seek the secret of obtaining the benefit of this love. But I now see that there is something more to this secret than the mere knowledge of the love's existence, which the mind tells me must exist, and so having, in my journeys to earth, heard of your meetings with the spirits who are seeking this love, or rather a way out of their darkness and sufferings, and having seen the effect of some of their efforts, I came to you to learn the way, if possible, by which I may obtain the soul experience which I have heard you, and the beautiful spirits who come to you, speak of. Of course, my ancient beliefs still have some influence over me, though I have found that Osiris, the Paget Messages 1915, and Isis are myths, but yet, that negative knowledge has not supplied me with the means by which I can get this love you speak of. While I know that the angry gods do not exist, still there is a void in my soul which I realize has never been filled. So I pray that if you can help me to the way that will lead to my finding this soul-filling love that you speak of, I will be greatly obliged if you will do so, and will follow that way. In the years since my coming into the spirit world, I have lived in a number of spheres, each one in succession a progressive one. But in none of these spheres which I have lived in, have I found that the inhabitants are possessed of this soul love that I am anxious to obtain. In the higher spheres in which I have lived and in the highest, there is a wonderful development of the mental qualities, and the knowledge possessed by these spirit inhabitants is beyond all conception of mortals. Sin does not exist in these highest spheres, and happiness is very great, and the spirits are very beautiful and bright. But in my comparison of the beauty and brightness of these spirits with those who claim this soul development of love, I notice a great difference. We have our loves and our harmonies, and peace reigns supreme, but yet I am not satisfied, and so with many others who live where I do. But the cause of this dissatisfaction is not revealed to us, and only, as I say, in my visits to the earth plane and hearing of this love, have I become convinced that the great secret of our dissatisfaction may be found among those spirits who claim to have this wonderful love. So I come to you and ask you to show me the way to learn of it. Well, I have visited the earth plane many times since I have been a spirit, and occasionally, have conversed with the spirits, who claim to have this love, and they have to some degree told me of this love, but I never thought much about it until lately. I was happy in my condition as I have told you of it, and did not think it worthwhile to inquire into the fact of what this love meant. But somehow, lately, the desire to learn of it has taken possession of me, and hence I come to you because I see others coming to you who say they need help. I did not go to the others you speak of because I thought that I might get more help by coming to you first. The spirits who are seeking your help say that they can in some way obtain an advantage in coming to you first. I don't know why, but they believe it, and when I saw the effect of their coming to you, I thought it might be so, and hence I came. I was the daughter of one of the early pharaohs and my name was Princess Saliba. I do not know how to compute the centuries, but I lived before the pyramids were built, so you see I have been in the spirit world a long time. Not now, but sometime I will come again and write you more in detail a description of the spheres through which I have progressed. I have called for your mother, and she is so very beautiful. She must have a great amount of this love. She says that she will show me the way to obtain it, and will love me herself, and take me to the greatest spirit in all the spirit world, in whom I can see this love developed in its greatest perfection. And I am going with her. So remember my promise to come again, for I will. So with many thanks and my kindest regards, I will say good night, Saliba. I am here, Jesus. The spheres in which Saliba lived are the ones that your grandmother described as being the homes of the merely intellectual spirits. In these different spheres are many subspheres and the different races of mankind naturally congregate with those spirits of their own race, so that while this Egyptian may have lived in these different spheres, it does not follow that she lived in the same subspheres with the spirits of other races, and in all probability she did not. She is a very ancient spirit, but her age as compared with eternity, that which is past as well as that to follow, is as a grain of sand on the seashore to all the rest of the sand. She is old as men consider age, but as we look upon it, she is of the now, and not very old. Saliba will tell you of the spheres in which she lived, but they will not be any different, or any greater than the ones your grandmother described. And she has not progressed above the sixth, and cannot until she receives the divine love and essence of the Father. So, as she describes these spheres to you, keep in mind the fact that she has never progressed beyond the sixth, as described by your grandmother. She may have passed through what seems to her many more spheres than the ones described by your grandmother, but all the various stages through which she passed constitute no more than the six lower spheres. She never was in the seventh or passed through it. So let your mind be settled on this point, no spirit who is without this love has ever gotten beyond the sixth sphere. 124, The Paget Messages 1915. The ancient Bible patriarchs and prophets, such as Moses, Abraham, Elisha and the others, never got beyond the sixth sphere until my coming when they then received the divine love. The fact that they are ancient spirits does not necessarily imply that they are in a very high sphere now. Your grandmother, for instance, is in a much higher sphere than all of the ancients who have never received the divine love. So the fact that a spirit is ancient, does not of itself mean that it is of a very high order of spirit. Many a spirit who passed over comparatively recently is as high in the sixth sphere as of these ancient ones. And many a spirit who came to the spirit world within a short time, your wife for instance, is in a higher sphere than many of these ancient ones who have been in the spirit life for centuries, yes, centuries upon centuries, and for the reason, that these ancients have only the mental development which can carry them into the sixth sphere only, while your wife has the soul development which has already carried her to the celestial spheres. So do not think that because a spirit who comes to you may be an ancient spirit that it may be in a high sphere, or can instruct you in those things which will lead you to the Father's kingdom, for it is not true. The Egyptian who came to you, say Liba, is now seeking this love and she will receive it, and progress higher as she develops her soul, but she will never get higher than the sixth sphere until her soul development fits her for the higher spheres.